From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch, where we bring you insights, analysis, and interviews on some of the most important issues facing you and your family. And it all comes from a biblical worldview. So for the next hour, I invite you to join me as we go beyond the headlines and the sound bites in pursuit of truth as we talk with national leaders and newsmakers. Washington Watch starts now.
Next week, I am going to be calling this motion to vacate. Absolutely calling it. I can't wait to see Democrats go out and support a Republican speaker and have to go home to their primaries and have to run for Congress again, having supported a Republican speaker, a Christian conservative.
That was Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene basking in the media light as she announced she would move on her motion to vacate the chair and try to oust House Speaker Mike Johnson next week. We're going to talk with Missouri Congressman Mark Alford a little bit later. And Florida's heartbeat law takes effect today in the Sunshine State. The Democrats are tripping over themselves to get to Florida to try and once again make it a campaign issue post-Roe.
The contrast in this election could not be more clear. Basically, under Donald Trump, it would be fair game for women to be monitored and punished by the government, whereas Joe Biden and I have a different view. We believe the government should never come between a woman and her doctor.
Of course, except when it comes to COVID vaccines and a list of other things. But anyway, that was Vice President Kamala Harris, who was in Florida today for an abortion rally. We're going to talk with Florida State Representative Mike Beltran, who is a co-sponsor of the Florida Heartbeat Law. And speaking of contrast, here is Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton discussing the ongoing pro-Hamas protest on university campuses.
The terrorist sympathizers in these little Gazas aren't peacefully protesting Israel's conduct of the war. They're violently and illegally demanding death for Israel, just like their ideological twins, the Ayatollahs in Iran.
Now, here is Michigan Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib on the House floor today discussing the campus protest.
I call on these universities to end the repressive tactics, to exercise restraint, to denounce the ongoing police brutality and stop suppressing the very activism, academic freedom, and thoughtful debate that they seek to inspire in their students.
Wow. No commentary needed. Well, as we speak, the House has just passed a bipartisan anti-Semitism bill that would address what is happening on university campuses. The question is now, what will the Senate do? Well, we're going to talk in just a moment with Oklahoma Senator James Lankford. And Secretary of State Antony Blinken was in Israel today and once again sounding actually much more supportive of our ally Israel.
We're determined to get a ceasefire that brings the hostages home and to get it now. And the only reason that that wouldn't be achieved is because of Hamas.
Well, earlier today, I spoke with House Speaker Mike Johnson, who said he spoke with Blinken yesterday about bolstering our verbal support for Israel.
I spoke just yesterday with Secretary of State Blinken on a number of issues related to Israel and emphasized to him again how important it is for us to stand with that close friend and ally that we have there, the only stable democracy in the Middle East, in their most desperate time, in their fight for their very survival as a nation.
Well, it looks like that message was received. Well, and finally today, I'm going to be joined by Dr. Ben Carson to talk about how protecting the unborn is actually a winning issue if Republicans will have the courage to talk about it. He's also going to give us a preview on his new book that's coming out very soon, The Perilous Fight, Overcoming Our Culture's War on the American Family. That's coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything, you can find it all later at TonyPerkins.com, along with action items as well. Well, another tense night on college campuses led to hundreds of arrests when New York City police cleared pro-Hamas demonstrations at Columbia University. Now, on the opposite coast, University of California, Los Angeles officials canceled classes today after a night of violent clashes on their campus. These represent just two examples from dozens and dozens of chaotic campus demonstrations that continue, even as the Biden administration appears paralyzed to respond. Well, join me now to discuss this and more is Senator James Lankford from Oklahoma. He serves on four Senate committees, including the Senate Homeland Security Committee and the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. Senator Lankford, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Good to see you again, Tony.
So, Senator, you called on the Attorney General Merrick Garland, and Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona, to restore order on campuses. It seems like they're more concerned about votes in November than preventing violence now.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable that the Biden administration is so worried about this election that they're pursuing the pro-Hamas election group and to say, we really desperately need your support. That's a bizarre place for an American president to be able to be on. People that commit acts of violence on a campus should face campus discipline. They're violating the code of conduct for that university, so they should face the consequences that are already in writing for violating the code of conduct in that university. When they're trespassing, when they're occupying a building, they face criminal charges as well to be able to do this. It's not peaceful protests that are coming in and people just exercising dissent. That's entirely appropriate to exercise dissent, but this is far beyond that. And these are folks that are literally pro-Hamas, trying to intimidate Jewish students on campus to get them to leave and to be able to intimidate them away, or to be able to shut down classes, which they've been successful at, or to shut down graduation ceremonies, which they've been successful at. So again, this is administration not doing their basic task of actually enforcing the code of conduct, and not law enforcement actually doing their basic task of enforcing the law.
You know, Senator, anti-Semitism is not new. It's been around quite some time, but this level, this violent demonstration, manifestation of this is new for what we're seeing on college campuses across America, and how so many elected officials, as you pointed out, in this administration are finding it difficult to call it what it is and put an end to it.
Just being clear at this point, this is anti-Semitism that's on campus. And just to be able to state that seems to be a struggle for this administration, for different university leadership to be able to speak out and say anti-Semitism is wrong in all forms and we should speak out against it. We've even encouraged over and over again, as you mentioned the letter before, and what we've continued to be able to push, there is a definition that's a international recognized definition called the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. That definition defines anti-Semitism, gives clear examples of what anti-Semitism is. The Department of Education currently refuses to be able to adopt that as their main definition of anti-Semitism. It doesn't try to impede speech. If someone right. wants to say, I disagree with Netanyahu, I disagree with the war, that's their right to be able to speak it out. But when it transitions into genocide, when it transitions into things, hateful speech like Jews go back to Poland and things that are being screamed by some of these quote-unquote protesters, that is transitioning from peaceful protest into acts of anti-Semitism and intimidation. We should call it what it is.
Well, the House just moments ago passed H.R. 690, the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, which actually does reference that definition. And if I'm not mistaken, the State Department has adopted that definition
yes.
as well.
Decades ago.
But why not the Department of Education on our own soil?
So the Trump administration used that definition within the Department of Education, within the Department of Justice. The Biden administration immediately set that aside and said they're not going to do that. State Department still has recognized that for decades on this. That bill that just passed in the House, I'm a sponsor of that in the Senate, like to be able to see that come to the Senate, and would push for a clear passage of that to be able to make it very clear. Again, it doesn't inhibit anyone's speech, but it does tell everyone that's in education, if your university is wavering on what is anti-Semitism, it gives very clear definitions so that everyone will know. And this is not something that's radical. This is something that's been accepted by countries all over the world, including our own State Department, which is not exactly a conservative bastion
right.
location of any agency in government.
Exactly.
So let's just make it clear what it is and what it is not.
So what are the prospects in the Senate? Is Senator Schumer going to allow this bill to come forward in the Senate?
So far, he has not made a statement on it. It's passed overwhelmingly, thankfully, in the House on a bipartisan vote there.
Right.
And I would hope that we can actually get that up for a vote here in the Senate, not to be able to find ways to be able to get it as an amendment vote, to be able to attach it onto something else that's moving. We just need to make it clear. what do we need to do as Americans when someone speaks out this way? Call it what it is should be the clear answer. It's anti-Semitism. It's anti-Jewish hatred.
Senator Lankford, let's talk Israel for just a moment. You were over there just a few weeks ago, shortly after I was there. Are you encouraged by, actually, this week we've seen stronger statements of support coming out of the Biden administration, in particular Secretary of State Antony Blinken? Are you encouraged by that?
Well, I'm encouraged today, but also know I'll be discouraged tomorrow because this administration seems to waver back and forth. October and November and early December, the Biden administration was very clear. We have an ally. Israel has been attacked by terrorists. We're going to stand with Israel and be able to help her. And then since really January, it seems like every other week they're alternating in this. That is a clear frustration. It makes it more difficult for negotiations. It makes Hamas feel like that they can wait this out and to be able to use these moments or take on more hostages to be able to have more leverage. When we make a very clear statement on our ally, when we make a very clear statement against Hamas and their terrorism, and they need to release all hostages right now, that's a better position for the United States, and it's strengthening for the leverage in Israel.
You would think that we would not have any conversations with them until the hostages are released, but yet we now are getting word that Palestinian refugees from Gaza are being brought to the United States, that the administration wants to do that. I mean, should we not put all maximum pressure on Hamas to release hostages, which includes some Americans still?
Right. Right. We still have Americans that are still being held in Gaza. We need to have the maximum amount of pressure that we can in every way that we can. No one wants to see civilians suffer. But Hamas functions as a terror organization very different than our military. The United States military puts itself between harm's way and civilians.
Right.
Hamas puts civilians between harm's way and their military forces. So they live underground in protected areas, put civilians on top. But we need to make it very clear, Israel is going after terror organizations and people that are still pledging to be able to kill them today. They have the right to be able to defend their own nation and to be able to go after people that are fully planning to come after them.
Yeah, I mean, there's no comparison between the two. When you look at Israel and the IDF and you look at Gaza and Hamas, apples and oranges are...
Right.
Some other fruit. But I hate to bounce around here, but we just got about a minute left. Tomorrow is the National Day of Prayer. You're going to be there, a part of that. I mean, prayer is always appropriate for our nation, but it seems like where we stand today, it's even more so.
It is, and I challenge people to stop and to pray and to get together in small groups and to pray and to be able to pray on their own in quiet, private places, to be able to do publicly sometimes what they do privately all the time. That's to be able to pray. And also challenge people of faith. We get into the habit now of griping and complaining about government, what's happening in the world. Here's a simple challenge. We should pray more than we complain. If we catch ourselves complaining all the time and praying only a little bit of the time, that needs to be flipped and to ask God to be able to change our own hearts as he's working on the hearts of other leaders in the nation. So pray more than we complain is not a bad first step.
Well, we're told to do that, to not to be anxious, but to pray and to even be thankful for these challenging times that we live in. Senator James Lankford, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Good to see you again, Tony.
All right. I'll see you tomorrow. The National Day of Prayer. Folks, I hope you'll join with the National Day of Prayer. There are events all over the country in communities across America. I would encourage you to be a part of that. All right, after the break, Florida's heartbeat law protecting babies after 6 weeks of pregnancy takes effect today. We're going to took effect today. We're going to talk with one of the co-sponsors next.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. Okay, I failed to mention this, but coming up May the 19th is Pray For and Stand With Israel Sunday. And so we are going to have churches all across this nation that are participating in this just to pray. Just take a few minutes and pray for Israel. But you can do it as well. Simply text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. And you'll get a link. And you can sign up and be a part of that. And if you're a pastor, we'd love to have your church be a part of this effort to visibly, in a very visible way, stand with and pray for Israel. All right, the Florida Heartbeat Bill took effect today, which protects the life of unborn babies after 6 weeks of pregnancy. All right, everybody's saying, well, this is a state issue. Well, the state's been taking the issue seriously, and they've been protecting unborn children. Well, last month, the Florida Supreme Court upheld this legislation, but also issued a decision that allows a vote to take place this November to enshrine abortion in the Florida state constitution. There's going to be a ballot initiative. So how can those dedicated to protecting life in Florida prepare for this upcoming vote? I mean, especially when you've got, Democrats tripping over themselves to get to Florida to try to make it an issue. The only way they're going to do that is if Republicans remain silent, because the reality is the American people are not where the Democratic Party, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, are at on this issue. They want abortion until birth with taxpayer funds. That's what they're calling for. But we have states like Florida that have passed common sense legislation that protects the unborn. Well, State Representative Mike Beltran, who co-introduced this legislation in Florida, joins us. He's in the Florida House of Representatives. He represents the 70th District of Florida. Representative Beltran, welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So the bill's getting a lot more attention now, post-Roe, as the Democrats are trying to somehow paint Florida as extreme. How do you respond to all of those Democratic leaders making their way to Florida to point to this law.
I think it's absurd. For a long time, Florida had the most lenient abortion laws in the entire South, and only now have we finally closed that gap, and we're in line with South Carolina and Georgia, and we're still more lenient than much of the rest of the Deep and the Mid-South and parts of the Midwest. So Florida is well in line with the rest of the region of the country, which we're a part. And our abortion law that we passed has, first of all, we delayed the implementation to await guidance from our state Supreme Court. I didn't think we had to do that, but we did that. And then we have a whole bunch of exceptions, which that should gratify the opponents of the bill that we had so many exceptions. I'm not sure that they were constitutionally required or that they were necessary as a matter of policy. But I don't think we're extreme at all. I think we're right there where the Florida voters are and where a lot of Americans are, and where virtually every other state in our region until you get to North Carolina or Virginia. And
right.
That's really the is right in lockstep with us, or they have a full ban.
Well, you actually make a very good point. The pro-abortion Guttmacher Institute released data that found that one out of every, this was before the law took effect, obviously, one out of every three abortions in the South is done in Florida. And one in 12 across the United States occurred in Florida. So it was a lot of abortions taking place in Florida because it had, as you said, very liberal laws when it came to that. But now you have laws that are more in line with the people. Now, I'll have to ask you this, Representative Beltran, when you've got, you know, people on both sides of the issue, I still believe that there is a federal role as it pertains to the protecting of human life, but you have some saying, well, this is a state issue. Well, the state's acted. Should they not respect what the state of Florida has done?
Well, that's exactly what the Supreme Court said in Dobbs. They said they're returning the issue to the states, and lo and behold, Florida passed additional abortion restrictions. And I'll note, to your last point, that when we did a 15-week bill a couple of years ago, it sort of coincided with Dobbs. And as we put in more restrictions and took it down to 15 weeks from 24 weeks, the number of abortions in Florida actually increased, because at the same time Dobbs was issued and the rest of the South had either passed their own laws or they had their trigger laws go into place. And we passed an abortion bill to restrict abortion, and the abortion went up in Florida because more people were coming from the rest of the South to Florida. And at that point, we went from the most lenient state to still being the most lenient state, despite passing a 15-week bill.
Right.
So the idea that Florida is some sort of an outlier, I think, is absurd. I think that folks in the rest of the South and maybe people in the North are aggrieved that it's going to be a little bit harder to practice abortion tourism, and I make no apology for that. We have beaches, and we have parks, and we have good weather. Abortion is not part of what we're marketing for tourism to the rest of the country.
Well, and I'm glad to hear that. Let me ask you this question, Representative Beltran. This fall, November, the pro-abortion crowd has put onto the ballot an initiative which would enshrine abortion into the Constitution at the point of viability. How does that stand, and what do pro-life voters in Florida need to be doing?
Well, we need to be getting the message out that the approval of that ballot in terms of the form of the language and the adequacy of the disclosure was issued on April 1st, which is the same day that the court said that, lo and behold, our state constitution, which basically tracks the federal constitution and does not create some additional protection or right to do these abortions in Florida, it was issued on the same day. And the court said, look, we're going to let you bring this issue to the people. And now the pro-choice folks are going to have to go out and get 60%. It's our mission to stop them from getting 60%. People need to understand just how extravagant this proposed constitutional amendment is. It gets rid, up until viability, of all restrictions on abortion. You're going to get rid of mandatory ultrasounds. You're going to get rid of waiting periods. They're going to get rid of health and safety regulations. You're going to get rid of informed consent laws. Even parental consent is going to go out the window. They have a carve-out for notification, so the law is going to be that they're telling parents rather than asking parents if their minor daughters can get an abortion. They're going to throw out an entire chapter of Florida statutes, and the Florida Supreme Court justice, who was on the side that said this could go onto the ballot, he called it a wolf. He said, this is a wolf, but it's adequately disclosed. I'm going to let it on the ballot, but I don't think it's good policy. The people are going to vote. So it's by no means an imprimatur from the Supreme Court that this is their policy. And we need to get the word out. It's not a moderate thing. It's not just targeted at our heartbeat bill or even the 15-week bill. It just completely gets rid of all our rights.
It is reflective of the Democrats on this issue. It is extreme. And you're right. We got to get the word out. Representative Beltran, great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us today. And again, job well done.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, folks, stick with us. More Washington Watch straight ahead.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. All right, I want to play a very quick clip of Kamala Harris, who was down in Florida today. Again, we were just talking about that. She was at an abortion rally, reproductive freedom rally, they call it. Play clip number 13.
Donald Trump's friends in the United States Congress are trying to pass a national ban. And understand, a national ban would outlaw abortion in every single state, even in states like New York and California.
All right. Can you say liar? That's not happening. But what is happening is the Democrats have put forward, in fact, even under Nancy Pelosi, passed it, but it didn't get through the Senate, the Women's Health Care Act, which would eliminate, just like Representative Beltran talked about in Florida, eliminate every pro-life law across the country and enshrine abortion up until birth. You cannot believe a word they're saying, right? And you can quote me on that. Okay. Despite word from House Democrat leaders that they will not participate in facilitating the chaos that Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene wants to create in the House by pushing forward with a motion to vacate House Speaker Mike Johnson, she announced today that she's going to move forward with her effort next week. Well, it's clearly going to fail without a strong majority of Democrats and Republicans being for it. So far, only three Republicans have come forward and said that they would support this effort. Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Mark Alford. He serves on the House Armed Services Committee and the House Agriculture Committee. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Missouri, and he joins me by phone off the House floor as the House has been voting this afternoon. Congressman Alford, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Tony.
So, by the way, we were tracking the anti-Semitism measure past the House. That's a good move. That was a strong statement, a bipartisan statement. Now goes over to the Senate. Give us your thoughts on what's happening on these college campuses across the country.
Tony, I've never seen anything like it in my life. And I think we talked last October, after October 7th, of course. And when these anti-Semitism pronouncements started to come out, and it was becoming more rapid and more vocal, I couldn't believe it. I did, you know, I knew anti-Semitism existed, of course, but I didn't know it was this deep-seated. And I think now we are starting to see the true evil that exists, not just in this nation, but I think all over the world, the evil of Satan and his animosity towards God's chosen people. And I think what you're seeing now is a combination of things. I think it's students who are largely ignorant of what they're talking about when they talk about from the river to the sea. They can't even name what the river or the sea is. And I think really ignorant as to what they're saying. I'm hoping there's a great level of ignorance, but I do think there's some hatred there.
Yeah.
I think there is hatred and jealousy, all these things that Satan stirs up in our lives. And to add to that, the professional agitators put forth by Soros and other of his ilk who are trying to divide our country.
Right.
This whole division that's caused by the side of evil.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. We cannot look at this apart from the spiritual nature of it as well. Now, let's talk about division for just a moment. You've been very critical of any motion to vacate the speaker in the current climate. Marjorie Taylor Greene says she's moving forward next week. What do you say to that?
I think it's a mistake. I've said it's a mistake all along. I think Mike Johnson is a man of God with integrity, doing the best he can under the circumstances of a two-seat majority. And I can't get a straight answer as to who would they replace him with, who could get the necessary votes to pass the legislation meaningful that could advance us forward as a nation. There is no answer to that. I think this is just causing further disruption and chaos within our conference, within our body. And at this time, when we do not have an effective leader in the White House, someone has to lead. And we need to let our elected leader, Mike Johnson, actually lead. And that means when you have a leader, someone's got to follow. And we've got to put our pride aside. Yes, principles do matter. But I'm challenging everyone in our conference to search their hearts. Are they making decisions based on principle, or is it pride?
Right. Are some of your colleagues getting a little tired of what I would describe as hostage-taking? Marjorie Taylor Greene is holding the House hostage by this motion to vacate.
Tony, I am. I can only speak for myself, because to tell you the truth, I don't really. We had a Bible study today in Tim Walberg's office. Five or six of us get together every Wednesday, and we did talk a little bit about this, the frustration. But other than that, I really don't talk to other members about it. I will tell you how I personally feel is I did not give up my career and my security and campaign for 2 years and invest a lot of time and attention away from my family to come up here and deal with this almost like a kindergarten atmosphere. We are better than this as a nation. And I came up here to get things done.
Yeah, I understand the frustration. Many of your colleagues feel the same way. Congressman Mark Alford, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for stepping aside from the House floor to talk to us this afternoon.
Thank you. God bless, Tony.
All right, Congressman Mark Alford of Missouri. All right, coming up next, Dr. Ben Carson joins me. So don't go away. We're coming back for a conversation with the doctor after this.
Chris
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold, or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Good to have you with us for this Wednesday edition of Washington Watch. The website is tonyperkins.com. Lots of resources there for you. Also, May the 19th, reminding you once again, Pray for and Stand with Israel Sunday. To join us and be a part of it, text the word Israel to 67742. That's 67742. And you'll get a link, show you how you can participate. Well, our word for today comes from Judges chapter 7. So Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came to the outpost of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just as they had posted the watch, and they blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers that were in their hands. Then the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers and held the torches in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hands for blowing, and they cried, "The sword of the Lord and Gideon." And every man stood in his place all around the camp, and the whole army ran and cried out and fled. Now, this is what I call unconventional warfare. 300 troops with torches and trumpets against an army of 135,000. The Lord did what he promised. He fought the battle for them. God wanted to make very clear the battle was his. They just needed to show up, stand up, and speak up. And so it is with us. To find out more about our journey through the Bible and to join us on this journey, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. All right, as I discussed earlier in the program, the Biden reelection campaign sent Vice President Kamala Harris to Florida to lash out against Florida's law protecting life that takes effect today. It's the heartbeat bill. Now, the president's reelection campaign has pushed this whole issue. I mean, they are wanting to make the 2024 election about abortion. Now, here's the only way they will succeed in that. all right, if Republicans are silent. Because if they'll have a conversation about it, they'll be able to show the American people who's really extreme. Well, joining me now to discuss this and much more is Dr. Ben Carson. He's the former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, a 2016 Republican presidential candidate, and the pioneering former director of the pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins. He is now the founder and chairman of the American Cornerstone Institute. Dr. Carson, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you for being such a courageous voice these days.
Well, I thank you, and I appreciate you for always encouraging Republicans to embrace the life issue and stand for the sanctity of life. It's a winning issue if you believe it and you talk about it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I spent most of my professional career as a pediatric neurosurgeon trying to save lives. Frequently, they were premature babies, 26, 27, 28 weeks gestation, sometimes operating all night, sometimes even operating on babies before they were born. I can very much assure you that they're very much alive. Just because they're in the uterus, that does not mean that they're not a living human being. And they can feel pain. And, you know, we have to advocate for them. And we're in a little bit of a tough situation politically if we don't navigate it the right way. You know, there are those like myself who believe that life begins at conception. There are those who say 6 weeks. There are those who say 15 weeks. What we need to do is stop fighting amongst ourselves, recognize we're all under the umbrella of pro-life. And we need to continue the fight. The fact that Roe v. Wade was overturned and put the fight at the state level rather than at the federal level is a good thing, because at the state level, you can have in-depth discussion. You can have in-depth discussions with your representatives. We have a democratic republic, which depends on people being represented correctly. So you can make your feelings known. And we can continue to push for a culture of life, not a culture of death. And I think it's very important in this argument to be vocal and to ask questions of those on the other side, like, well, what is unacceptable to you in terms of abortion? They have a hard time answering that question because they're actually willing to kill babies that are viable outside of the womb. You know, from 6 months on of gestation, we can now have it with technology that will save that baby, it will save that baby's life. So if that baby could be living outside of the womb, why do you have the right to kill the baby because it's inside the womb? And then, as I frequently say, in our laws, if you murder a woman who's pregnant, you get charged with 2 counts of homicide. Why is that? Obviously, our legal system recognizes that life.
Right. Well, in order to ask those questions, you've got to be willing to talk about it. And I think, now, I do think I'm with you. I believe that we should be protecting life from the moment of conception on. That's when life begins. But I also know that in a republic, we have to build consensus. So we just take a page out of the book. In terms of how we got to a point where Roe was overturned, we educate, we teach, we show the humanity of the unborn, and we move the public to the right spot. And we keep moving, as we're seeing across the country today. But you have to be willing to engage in the conversation, defend your position, and not be in retreat. And that's, unfortunately, what's happened, is that in this post-Roe world, many Republicans have lost their footing on this issue. I still believe that if we're willing to talk about it, we are where the majority of the American people are at.
And I think many of us have forgotten that this is the beginning of the fight. Overturning Roe is the beginning of the fight. It's not the end of the fight. We need to continue to educate people. You know, when you allow people to find out what an abortion actually is, particularly in the second and third trimester, where you actually put the forceps into the uterus, grab whatever it can grab, twist and pull, and out comes an arm or a leg. You know, most people are kind of put off by that, and we need to let them know what's going on. You can't just sugarcoat this. This is murder of a human being who has feelings. And as we make that more apparent to people, I think we will move more toward a culture of life. It's interesting that a lot of young people are much more pro-life because they've grown up in an era where we can actually see what's in the uterus. We can't hide that
from.
They recognize that it's a human being that's moving around that can react.
Well, I'm kind of laughing, chuckling a little bit, Dr. Carson, because we're told as conservatives we're anti-science. We're not the ones that are having a problem with science. The science is very clear on life. The science is very clear on gender. It seems like the other side is struggling with the science.
Absolutely. And, you know, for me as a neuroscientist, you know, I look at that baby from the moment of conception, that brain starts to develop. I mean, we're talking millions of neurons every day. Within a very short period of time, that baby is much more neurologically sophisticated than a snail darter. And yet, look at all these environmentalists running around saying, we got to save the snail darter. How come they're not concerned about the baby?
Yeah. The hypocrisy is stunning. Tomorrow is the National Day of Prayer. One thing I appreciate about you, Dr. Carson, is in any capacity you've served in, including Secretary of Health and Hospitals, didn't hide the fact you're a Christian. And in fact, I remember taking pastors to go to your office to pray with you. You are hosting, the Cornerstone Institute's hosting a National Day of Prayer call tomorrow. How can people participate in that?
They can actually go to the website. They can register, because you have to be registered to be on the call, AmericanCornerstone.org. And we'd like to get as many people praying as possible. You know, when I think about my life and all the things that have happened, just amazing things, I realize a lot of them are the result of prayer and faith in God. And he doesn't force himself upon anybody, but if you will come to him with a humble heart and faith, the sky is the limit.
And folks, I'd invite you to join us in that call. I'm going to be with Dr. Carson tomorrow on that call. You can go to tonyperkins.com. There's a link to the American Cornerstone Institute, and you can register for that. Now, Dr. Carson, you also have a new book that's coming out with your wife, Candy, The Perilous Fight. You highlight the left's attack on the American family and the devastation that has created for our country. But you don't stop there. You talk about how we can regain our footing in this country by starting with the family.
Well, we have to recognize that we do have an enemy, that we are in a fight, that it is having a very deleterious effect on us. And I give a lot of statistics in the book about two-parent nuclear families and how much better the kids come out, what the advantages are, and the support that a mother and a father can give to each other and how their lives are improved. You know, we seem to have forgotten that. We're getting married much later or not at all. Children are not getting their values from the family. They're getting their values from the internet, from associates. This is not the way it was supposed to be. And particularly, you know, children have developing brains and children are naturally curious and very impressionable. And if they don't have parents who are Johnny on the spot watching what's going on, they're very likely to be influenced in a negative way.
Right. And by the way, we've looked at it here at the Family Research Council with Dr. George Barna in that that a worldview is shaped between 15 months of age to 13 years. So those are very, very important times. And again, you make reference to the social sciences, the evidence out there in terms of what is best for a child. But again, the left refutes that or they deny it. And increasingly, we're finding they want to stop that type of research because it doesn't tell the story they want told.
Well, what's funny is that whether you look at the right-leaning or the left-leaning research institutions and think tanks, they all come up with the same data. They all show very clearly and distinctly what kind of family environment results in the best outcomes for the children. So they basically have to stick their head in the sand and make up things if they're not going to accept their own data.
All right. So, Dr. Carson, we've got a country that's ailing. We have a family structure that is weak. What's the prescription?
Very simple. We need to return to God. We talk about our Creator and the founding document of our nation, that our rights come from God, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And when we throw away godly principles of loving your fellow man, of caring about your neighbor, of developing your God-given talents to the utmost so that you become valuable to the people around you, having values and principles that govern your life, and we substitute that for our own statutes and laws and regulations and our own truths, then what happens to us? You see people out there today saying, my truth and your truth. What about the truth? God has given us the truth. We lived by it for a long period of time, and we went from nowhere to the pinnacle of the world as a result of it. And as we've thrown it away, we're descending rapidly also. But it's not too late. We haven't hit rock bottom, and we can turn it around.
But we have to be, number one, we have to have courage. We've got to be bold as believers. We've got to know what we believe and be bold enough to speak it. And that's a part of reading, educating yourself. And, of course, your book speaks to that, and it gives some very practical steps, the perilous fight, how the fact that how the family has been attacked, but how we can take a stand for truth. And by the way, you're going to be in Baton Rouge at the FRC's Faith and Freedom Chapel on May the 30th for an evening. We're going to be talking about your book. We're going to have a conversation, and people will be able to meet you and get a copy of your book as well as ask questions.
I'm going to have a good time. We're going to have a good time with that.
So,
With God's help, I do believe that we can turn this thing around, and I do believe that people are ready for it. And it has to be pretty dark sometimes before people see the light, but I think we're there, and we're ready to shine that light brightly.
I think you're absolutely right, and there is hope, but we have to realize we are the answer. We are a part of the answer. God has placed us here, entrusted us with this moment in time. We have to be faithful to our calling. Dr. Ben Carson, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us. I look forward to being with you on the prayer call tomorrow and to see you in Baton Rouge on May the 30th.
Thank you for being a trooper.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Ben Carson, to find out more about the prayer call or the evening with Dr. Carson on May the 30th, go to TonyPerkins.com. You can follow the links over and find out how you can get a ticket to join us on May the 30th. All right, folks, we're almost out of time. Let me again remind you about May the 19th. Pray for and stand with Israel Sunday. To be a part of that, simply text the word Israel to 67742. You know what? We need to be praying. We need to be praying for Israel. We need to be praying for our country. Our country is in desperate need of prayer. But then we need to have the courage and the boldness to stand and speak truth. Don't be intimidated. Don't be intimidated. Let me leave you with what the Apostle Paul says. If you won't take my word for it, take his. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.
Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.